Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, and welcome to The Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A. Over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Well, you know, I'm happy to be here and alive and et cetera in a city that feels like both cities. Feels like Beirut of the 1970s, you know, Beirut, Lebanon. It is wild out here, Ms. Allen. It's beyond wild. It's terrifying and frightening, if you will. I understand you have some additional information. You have a flyer of an event that is taking place around 1 o'clock in our city. In the city of Minneapolis. Could you just bring our listening audience up to speed on that?
Sure, Mr. Edwards. It's an event called Guns Down, Love Up. It's today, September 21st, from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. It's a free event. It's going to be at Bethune Park. And I'm not trying to be an advertisement for it or anything like that. But I'm looking at this thing, and from the narrative of what I'm seeing, Mr. Edwards, it's an event to draw attention to the number of gun violence and the people that have been shot over north and across the city. But it's entertainment, less than a solution, and I'll put it at that.
Yes, I heard some interesting things over the last 24 hours, if you will. I know that the individuals, what are the names that are associated with it? I think it's there on the program, if you will. Could you just name the individuals? Because many of them are city officials, if you will. I know Sasha Cotton, head of the powerful Office of Violence, if you will, of the Reduced Violence. I know that the African-American woman who's head of the repass or recall or whatever it is that's been giving out a lot of money. I understand this group basically has given out $2 million here over the last number of years, Bloomberg money, federal government money, Department of Justice, Health and Human Services. Isn't there a passage there that talks in terms of trauma?
You know, I don't see that in the narrative of the Guns Down Love Up page, Mr. Edwards, but I am trying to get a better visual here. I mean, they have many sponsors. My Brother's Keeper, of course, you just stated the flow of money or the agencies that would provide money for that particular initiative. State Voices. Acon MN, I don't know what that is, but I'll find out before the end of the show. The city of Minneapolis. It has a black boy on the poster. This is in the graphic, Mr. Edwards. A black boy, maybe between 12 and 15 years old, with a red hat cocked backwards, and wearing a white shirt. And in the background is a gun formed into a microphone. Now, wow. anybody that analyzes graphic design and outreach and how to attract certain individuals from a psychological point of view in advertising understands that this dangerous way to market this with that particular photo, especially with the gun microphone in the background.
A microphone designed, crafted in the form of a gun, a weapon, if you will. And
There was no logic at whatsoever in this. And, you know, I'm only saying this because I think we could do it better, but, you know, no one asked us. But moving right along, I'm looking at this and I'm shocked because if it's Guns Down, Love Up, why would you even put a gun? Logic says that you wouldn't put a gun in the picture. You know? And one black child.
Yes. Right. So now, something else that I'm aware of that has been under discussion for the last, I guess, 12 or 13 hours is that one of the organizations in which it was cut out of the process, was undermined, it was A Mother's Love, headed up by A Mother's Love, not the other piece that he did there. A Mother's Love was not a part of the entourage, if you will. And a woman by the name of Alicia Clemens, who has been heading up that organization. In fact, they just got some very favorable, I use that term again, publicity on Wednesday on KMSP. They were involved in helping to save a Caucasian individual who had become incapacitated from a drug overdose on West Broadway, which for those that are part of our international audience, is the main thoroughfare going through what is supposed to be the colored community, if you will. And there was a lot of coverage. The Mother's Love group got a lot of favorable publicity. Their personnel, boots on the ground, were there administrating first aid, et cetera. They were able to save the person's life. Now, the following day, we had another similar situation, and that person almost died, if you will. But I'm not understanding why city officials would in any way cut out a organization that is attempting to, you know, do the right thing, if you will. It looks like you need everybody that you possibly can have pulling together, if you will, particularly in light of the level of violence that is taking place. And by the way, we would be remiss, and tragically, and our condolences are going out this morning from the Don and Ron program to a number of families who have lost loved ones, including a young African-American who was shot to death outside of a black church in St. Paul on Aurora Avenue by gunmen, if you will, as he left the church after a Wednesday Bible study with his father and his nine-year-old daughter. He was shot to death in front of his daughter. His father exchanged gunfire with the gunman. He does have a permit to carry. The possibility of someone was, in fact, wounded. There was a alleged blood trail. But that is scary. I mean, I know there are bad things that are going on, but it's kind of rare that you see an ambush take place in front of a church as a person is etching in that church with his Bible in his hand and has been at Bible study on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of conversation going on in your part of the metro area. Go ahead, sir.
Mm-hmm. I would just like to say, you know, our condolences to the family, but, you know, a minute ago we were talking about the event, and Minneapolis City Council person, Philippe Cunningham, he corrected us by saying, typing on social media, that this isn't a City of Minneapolis event.
That's just not true. That is not true. He is totally incorrect. Yes. I don't know if he's incorrect intentionally, trying to disguise. That document that you have also includes the fact that the mayor of the city, Jacob Fry, police chief, and other city officials, including, I do believe, Mr. Cunningham. It is definitely incorrect. The money, and maybe Mr. Cunningham wants to explain that, he's welcome to come on the radio, if you will, across this world of ours, and explain the inconsistency, because the money is coming from the city's coffers as a part of grants and other monies that have been allocated to the city of Minneapolis, including the Department of Health and Public Safety, including the Bloomberg Foundation, and et cetera. So I don't know what this elected public official is trying to pull on us, because we have clearly vetted and done our research. This is most clearly an operation headed up by city officials, okay?
Exactly.
Not talking about somebody came here from Mars. These are city officials. And it will be going on from 1 to 8 this evening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm shocked, and, God, and that you're telling me. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I just want to say that I was shocked because, you know, he's my friend on Facebook, and I appreciate that. And so for him to respond, correct me, I mean, I appreciate that. But like I responded back to him, I said, thank you, but collaborations have lines to connect, ergo ownership. And I hope he understands what that means. But
absolutely.
But, yeah, it's a connection. So I don't know what you say. Mr. Edwards, our phone lines are blowing up at 347-426-3992.
Well, we have other pieces of information that I'm now required to place out there. We are not trying to hide anything. The other piece that and this information has been absolutely confirmed also. Again, Councilman Cunningham needs to check with quote-unquote law enforcement authorities. There was a homicide early this morning at 39th and Humboldt in the city of Minneapolis and North Minneapolis, and it has led to threats. I want to emphasize this, Mr. Allen. It has led to threats from white militia around the country that they intend to revenge to avenge the death of a Caucasian shot and killed this morning in North Minneapolis. Again, a Caucasian shot and killed at 39th and Humboldt this morning. I'll call it scuttlebutt at this particular point, indicates that the governor has been notified that there needs to be a state of emergency declared. And this is, you know, certainly just before the big event at 1 o'clock this afternoon at the Bethune Park. I repeat again, that a Caucasian was shot and killed this morning at 39th and Humboldt, and white militia paramilitary groups have indicated that they will take revenge on the death of one of their quote-unquote white compadres. That's just how out of control this is right now. So if folks want to deal with that, welcome. We welcome any challenge to the authenticity of what it is we are providing to a worldwide audience. So I regret the fact that it was necessary to go in that direction when we saw ourselves being challenged by a elected public official from the city of Minneapolis about that this event from 1 to 8 at Bethune Park in North Minneapolis is not a city-sponsored event. I don't know what this individual is talking about. Does the right hand know what the left hand is doing and vice versa?
Well, sometimes not. Sometimes not, Mr. Edwards. It's very interesting.
Uh-huh.
So what do you think the price tag for this event in North Minneapolis is, Mr. Edwards?
I am hearing, again, rumors that as much as $85,000 is in play. If you know, you have the document in front of you talking in terms of the entertainment entities that would be involved this afternoon with regards to this event. Some of the performers were asked to give their services, you know, pro bono, if you will, a legal term, if you will, and et cetera. Others are being paid. I assume, of course, with the city councilman maintaining that this is not a city-sponsored event, and all these city employees are identified in the documents that you have and I have and we're looking at.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but Councilman Cunningham has again posted on my page. Here's more information on who's leading the efforts. And it's a Carrie 11 news report. So now he wants us to tune in to Carrie 11. Gun violence start campaign. So I guess these families came together, and I haven't watched it yet. I'm just reading what he posted there. I guess these families came together and who were affected by gun violence and raised $85,000 plus to put this event on, which is admirable, I would say. But again, looking at the flyer, there was economic assistance. One of the groups being the city of Minneapolis, of course. So I'm not falling for the okie doke this morning. But yeah, thank you. Thank you, Councilman Cunningham. Appreciate that.
So the councilman has now confirmed $85,000 in money.
He has not. He has not confirmed. No. Let me correct this. He has not confirmed that. He's confirmed that.
Let's be absolutely on point.
He posted, I'm being sarcastic, Mr. Edwards. He posted a link to this Carrie Levin report that talked about this group, families affected by gun violence, gathering together. So the financial part is certainly not there. I have not watched the whole thing. It's playing on the studio monitor now, but I haven't muted. But when we get going, I'll figure out what it's about.
Yes. Well, like I said, I stand by my declaration that these are city officials, if you will, affiliated with city offices such as the Department of Violence, if you will, to end violence and et cetera, under a Miss Sasha Cotton, who is the director, a former director of the group known as GVI. First the Gang Violence Initiative, then Group Violence Initiative, and then, you know, the mayor of our beloved city took $1.1 million from the budget of the Minneapolis Police Department, a department which is greatly undermanned and et cetera, and shifted that money to the creation of the Office of Violence or Stopping Violence or et cetera, whichever name that they come up with. I'm just amazed that there was even a challenge with regards to how this the event this afternoon, which will take place from 1 to 8 at, again, Bethune Park, a park board. In fact, the question was being asked, are there enough park police officers, because park board police, I think, only have 27 sworn officers. We're not talking about the so-called park rangers. I'm just hoping that they will be able to have, you know, the necessary numbers to provide security, particularly in light of the threats. And I will now name two specific locations where these threats are now coming from. One is Sandpoint, Idaho. The other one is Mars Hill, North Carolina. Both of them are training grounds for white militia, and they are, to quote-unquote, angry, taking exception, and declaring that they will bring about revenge for the death of one of their patriots, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
So maybe
that
people should
get
up a little bit earlier in the morning and get their information and their act together. We repeat again. Sandpoint, Idaho, Mars Hill, North Carolina. These are both depots, as we like to call them, facilities, training facilities for white militia. And they are supported by facilities in and around Brainerd, Minnesota. For those that don't know Minnesota, go get your map. Brainerd, Minnesota, and what is happening, what we are seeing now, is that white militia are maintaining. They intend to take appropriate action in the death of one of theirs. Okay?
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Again, 39th and Humboldt Avenue North early this morning. Caucasian gunned down. Oh, by the way,
you know, Mr.
Councilman in that area, Don, not to cut you off, the councilman in that area is Councilman Cunningham.
Oops. Oh, okay. And Mr. Edwards,
yes.
You know, when I saw the story, when I saw that story in the morning, because of the normalness of hearing that black men get shot in North Minneapolis, I assumed into our production meeting that it was a black man that was shot and killed. But this also puts a difference, because there's going to be some investigation where normally there's not, or not that much.
Oh,
like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, you can believe that. I'm so sad because I'm just not sure that there's a plan to protect the black population in the city of Minneapolis if, in fact, there is a retaliatory action by white militia.
Not good. Mm-hmm. Not good at all, Mr. Edwards.
No, it's not.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines, because we have like several people that have been with us since the start of the show and more people popping up. Mr. Edwards,
okay,
first
go right
caller
ahead, Tom.
Thank you, sir. Caller 3565, you're live on the Ron and Don Show. What's your name and your question?
This is Dr. Evans.
Dr. Evans, hey, thanks for calling. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. What's your comment, sir, or question? Or just speak freely.
My question is that I oppose is the white gentleman that was shot over north. What was the reasoning behind him getting shot? Was he breaking and entering? Was he harassing someone? Did he assault someone? Or was it just a random shooting?
It would be unfair and unprofessional for us to say that we know the reason for the death of this individual, if you will. That is the responsibility of the city of Minneapolis's police department, if you will. Clearly, he was in the area, and he was gunned down. He's dead. He's gone, if you will. Now, I assume that the crime units and et cetera, and led by the homicide unit, are at the scene, if you will. Yellow tape is still up and et cetera, and so it'll be their responsibility. I could say this to you, my good doctor. It was not anyone's intention that this would be so quickly made public by the Don and Ron program coming from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. But it is escalated with regards to the threats that are now being made to revenge the death of this Caucasian citizen.
Well, here's the thing that we all have to understand is the biggest thing that people, you know, a lot of people always say the biggest threat that's facing young black men is the police. And it's not just the police department. It's a multifaceted group of organizations that's working against young black men. And a lot of this violence that we see, people like to think that these young guys just wake up in the morning and get out of bed. I'm sure there's a certain percentage that's doing that. But I will go on and say a lot of this violence that you see is you're seeing uncertainty. You're seeing young men that don't have, not really sure what to do, how to do it, and they don't really have the support systems to support them and to give them direction. Therefore, they head to the streets, they go to the streets, and they start to carry out acts of desperation. And so a lot of this violence that you're seeing going on, and this, you know, I sympathize with the family that's lost their loved one, but it, you know, a lot of it is people are uncertain. There's a lot of white people that are uncertain of what their tomorrow is going to be. So you see a lot of desperation. What we are experiencing now is we're looking at desperation, like the Great Depression. There was a lot of desperation, and we are mimicking that currently. It's close. The black families are squares. The black fathers, a lot of black fathers are out of homes. And the mothers simply are overwhelmed with trying to maintain it all. And so I just think it's a complex of things that's causing this.
Doctor, I think you're absolutely correct. But let me just say this out of deference and respect to the African-American family in the city of St. Paul, our sister city, is that when a young African-American with his 9-year-old daughter leaving a Bible study. We all know, you know, Wednesday is Bible study in America. Is gunned down outside of a black church on Aurora Avenue in St. Paul. I find it hard to talk in terms of how someone was so stressed out that they decided to open fire and exchange gunfire with the deceased's father, who does have a permit to carry. It was quite a bloody scene at that church a couple of days ago. And so we have to be balanced, sir, in regards to, you know, these questions. Yeah, but, you know, these questions work both ways. There's a reason, you know, that someone, excuse me, sir. There's a reason that someone would feel confident enough to ambush another human being of the same persuasion outside of a church after a Bible study and gun him down. you know, you're right. Parts of what you said are absolutely correct. This thing is out of control, absolutely out of control.
So let me ask you this about the brother that got shot. Was he targeted, or was it a retaliatory type situation?
Well,
or was he just a random person?
We don't know if it's retaliatory or not, but clearly he was targeted because the gunman opened fire on him, and he was exchanged and ended up gunfire. I'm surprised, Doctor, you've not seen this in either one of the major white papers here in the Twin Cities, Star Tribune.
This is the first time I'm hearing this, and I'm originally from the historical Rondo area.
Is that right? Okay. Well,
yes, sir.
This is the first time
I'm hearing.
The church is there on Aurora. You know where Aurora is at. You asked
only
the investigators can confirm or clarify. And was he targeted? I think that is one who has seen far too many crime scenes and have been to many crime scenes over the last 50 years. He clearly was targeted in front of his 9-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I you know what? I digress. I did hear about this yesterday from a parent. I did hear about this. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
It just came. I did hear about it yesterday. In all fairness, I think it's a tragedy between the incident in Minneapolis and the incident in St. Paul and many more incidents where people were killed and shot down in the street, innocent or deserving to be killed. I don't think anyone should be shot anywhere at any time. However,
mm-hmm.
I really feel that there are groups and special organizations that don't mind that any of this is happening. Sometimes they like things to happen like this to lower the numbers, and then when a white person gets shot in the street, I think they do it just so they can have a justification to act out. So until,
mm-hmm.
I guess the best thing to do is kind of hold steady and to see what brought this to a head, because as far as we know, he could have been entering somebody's garage. He could have been entering somebody's window of their house. So if we don't know the details of it and this militia group is deciding to take action, you know, based on the fact that he was killed, I think they're moving ill, and I think they should hold fast, and I think they should let the law handle the matter instead of taking it into their own hands, because that will just trigger, you know, the young adults are not really, the young black adults are not really tolerating all this hostile aggressiveness towards black people. They're not handling it well, and so they're going to act out. They're going to act out bad, and so
mm-hmm.
my fear is that it will be a chain effect. That's my fear.
All right. Okay. Any questions for you, Mr. Allen, Doctor?
Yeah. I mean, since we have Dr. Evans on, we were talking a day or so ago, and you had mentioned something over by Hiawatha and Lake Street. And a couple minutes or so, can you go over that and tell us exactly the scene that you saw as a professional black American man and that shocked you a little bit? Go ahead.
I've been tracking this now for about 2 months. I've been tracking this area, this group of people, and it, you know, the numbers, sometimes the numbers is 50, sometimes the numbers are, you know, close to 100 people. But, you know, you drive through there, and you see, you know, on one side, it's just two people sleeping on a mattress, not really covered up, but they're asleep. And then on the opposing side, adjacent side of the street, I mean, it's just this huge body of displaced people. And I have been tracking this.
The location.
The location is Lake and Hiawatha. It's right there under the underpass of the Hiawatha Bridge. And for 2 months, I've been tracking it. Every week, I'll go down there, sometimes on a Sunday night about 9:30, 10. Sometimes in the weekday, I'll go down there. And it is really disheartening to see people uncertain about where they're going to be. And now we're entering the fall, winter months, and I just can't help to think that the people that's going to die this year, because they're forced to sleep in the cold all winter. And I don't understand collectively. I know a lot of churches don't have resources, but I just don't understand why we're not trying to do more to help people. I'm really, really, you know, upset about that. That's really bothered me.
Well, one of the things that, you know, once you give consideration to, and you may want to erase those questions, and, you know, for the last 2 months you've been kind of monitoring, those questions need to be asked of the mayor, Jacob Frey, the Minneapolis City Council, if you will, and the ecumenical community over here in Minneapolis. Those are good questions because they've already gone through this process. There was a very large homeless camp in another part of South Minneapolis, and it took a number of months to find justification to dump those folks, primarily Native Americans, but later the camp swole until at one point it was over 1,000 individuals. We talked about it when no one else would touch it here on the Don and Ron program, and I think that you listen to us periodically and know that we talked about it a year ago at this time. We were really raising questions and et cetera. We were accused, Mr. Allen and myself were accused of being toxic, whatever that's supposed to mean in that context, about this kind of question. But I would strongly suggest to you, Doctor, that you raise these questions. So you are you a resident of Minneapolis or St. Paul, if I could ask?
I'm a resident of St. Paul.
Well, I would still use, my right of access, if you will, and et cetera. I'd certainly raise those questions to the mayor, his chief of staff. In fact, one of his key people, a woman by the name of White, will be at this event at Bethune Park this afternoon. She is his chief of staff as it pertains to public safety and et cetera. And I would strongly suggest that you send a letter the mayor has a phone system in which he actually answers the phone. I mean, his recording answers the phone to indicate the nature of your call and et cetera. I would certainly suggest that you think about that approach. These are public officials, if you will. They have a responsibility to the citizenry, irrespective of their social economic condition. They have a responsibility to try to provide equal protection under equal color of law, if you will. And so I think that would be a good task that you may want to embark on. And feel free to call us back here at the Ron and Don program and indicate what kind of response. In fact, I would, if I were you, I would bring together some of the ecumenical and professional individuals of your particular discipline and ask for a meeting with the mayor and the president and the vice president of the Minneapolis City Council and let them explain it. And then, you know, we welcome you to come back on this program and indicate to us how things went and what is their plan. Because after what happened in South Minneapolis last year in the vicinity of the Native American the Little Earth community, the mayor, our mayor, Jacob Frey, promised that this would never happen again. And now here we have you, and we have no reason to believe otherwise. We have you indicating that certainly for 2 months you have been watching intensely, vigilantly, if you will. And here are these people laying out and sleeping on the platforms and et cetera. And it's probably one of the reasons that, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Allen, we have it here on our computers, the Green Line has cut off service at night because so many
That's
people...
true. That's true.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes, I know it is. Yes. So, anyways, that's what we'd like to suggest. We had some other calls holding, if you will, but my colleague, Mr. Allen, may have some additional questions. Mr. Allen, go ahead. If not, we can thank the good doctor.
Well, thank you guys for having me. And I will follow up with that. I just am, it's very troublesome. It's a very troublesome thing that we're witnessing happen. I knew we had homeless people in Minnesota. I just didn't know that it would be to this degree. and that it wouldn't, that no one would care enough to try to rectify the situation. We still have enough time to put something together for these people before the winter gets here to help them get through this. That's a tough time. Wintertime is a tough time. I mean, we live in homes and houses, and it's tough for us to get up in the morning and get going. Just imagine sleeping in snow and ice all night, and then you have to get up and make your day. I think that's very, very unfortunate. Thank you,
sir. All right. Thank you, sir. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, Mr. Elton. Well, other calls may be waiting, so why don't we bring folks in? We've responded as best we can as journalists, if you will, because we have on this program recordings and et cetera of people saying and us reading newspaper accounts of the mayor said, not again, not again will we allow this to happen. And here we have a well-educated, but more importantly, connected individual who has been monitoring for 2 months, and it looks like to me, Mr. Allen, nothing has changed. Don, are you still there with us?
Yes, I am, Mr. Edwards. I am sorry people were texting me, but we do have another caller, 7935. You're live on the Ron and Don Show. Go ahead. Caller, you're live on the air. 7935. Okay, you probably want to stay in the queue. There you go. And we have another caller, Mr. Edwards. Looks like our friends from the Midwest. 1914,
right.
You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sir.
I was just wondering, has there been any talk there of, if the violence is this bad, has there been any talk of National Guard or sending in state troopers or anything? I mean, is it?
Yes, there has been, sir. I think we just talked it very briefly here, maybe 8 or 9 minutes ago. My understanding is that as we speak, there is some kind of consultation going on with the Commissioner of Public Safety, who is a African-American former chief of police, both in the city of St. Paul and then later the Transit Authority, also a former state senator, if you will, now a Commissioner of Public Safety for our beloved state of Minnesota. The question has come up a number of times. Right now, the justification and the interest, if you will, commitment is downtown Minneapolis. You know, I don't, well, maybe you don't, sir. We here in Minneapolis got real bad publicity about 4 days ago, Mr. Allen. We have that information on our computers. When CBS and their affiliate here, which is solely owned by CBS, is WCCO Channel 4, show graphic photos and et cetera of as many as 25, 30 young African Americans beating Caucasians on the streets of downtown. In fact, 19 of those young men regrettably have been incarcerated and now being held, if you will, in the Hennepin County Jail. Hennepin County being the county in which the city of Minneapolis exists within. And, yes, to your question, and particularly with the shooting last night at 39th and Humboldt, there has been a sense of escalation because you have another base, and base in the sense of white nationalists maintaining that they intend to take revenge, if you will, and et cetera. So to your question, it's certainly something because we're a very large state, as I think you know by looking at the map, and we really don't have enough highway patrol officers, as we call them here. Some places call it state police. We call them highway patrol. We do not have enough to protect the other good white citizens of our state, if you know what I mean. And so the National Guard is an alternative. It would not be the first time that it happened here. Unfortunately, 20-some years ago, during the time of what was identified as Murderapolis, I don't know, sir, if you have ever seen that information. That was back in the early 1990s, if you will. But there has been that discussion, and, of course, when you see the young African American who was at Bible study with his 9-year-old daughter and his father, and he's gunned down. We just had a caller that asked, was he targeted? I don't know if he was or not, but you have to assume that he was targeted because he was who the gunman opened fire on. And so to your question, kind of a long-winded response, the Downtown Council here in Minneapolis, which is a very powerful lobby group representing all the big white corporations, have indicated that enough is enough, that quarantine zones, if you understand, Steve, what it is that we're talking about, that quarantine zones be placed in locations. And also, gentlemen, I understood earlier this morning that there has been an increase ordered for a curfew in the city of St. Paul. That's in the city of St. Paul. So I hope I answered the aspects of your question.
Yes, yes. I have a question also. Is this violence, just general increase in violence, or is this gang-related, or...
This is a general increase, sir. Everyone likes to make it appear. We had an individual, and he clearly wasn't a member of anybody's gang, who had a domestic dispute with his significant other, and he doused her with a flammable and set her on fire. I think that she is still alive. I don't think that she has expired, though. She had 80% burns first and second degree burns on her body, if you will. We had a 2-year-old. See, no one wanted to talk about that either. We had a 2-year-old baby shot and wounded 4 days ago in North Minneapolis, in and around the same area. In fact, Mr. Allen, and again, it's Steve, right? Was like 41st and Aldridge, if you will. And then we had at one of our public high schools, North High School, at 15th and Irving in North Minneapolis, down towards Plymouth Avenue, there was another altercation between a gentleman and his significant other. Somewhere or another, she was trying to escape from the car. He took off her clothing, got caught. He drug her around the school before her clothing ripped off and she was left in the street. She is in critical condition. So you can't blame that on the gang, if you will. You know what I'm saying, sir? I mean, I'm very sensitive because that's always a narrative. Now, if we were to say that the Caucasian killed this morning at 39th and Humboldt was a white gang member, they'd run us off the air.
And I had another question. Is this violence, is it extending to the Somali community also, this increase? Is this?
Yes, it is. In fact, one of the tragedies that's happened with the Somalis is that most of the cases are what we call cold cases. In other words, they're not solved, if you will, and I'm not sure that they have suspects. The Somali community really has been taking a heck of a pounding with regards to violence in their community. I think of the 30, maybe 31 individuals, because we had an individual who took a whole month and a half for the public information officer for the Minneapolis Police Department, a guy by the name of Elder, who should have known better. It took him a month to get the information straight on a Caucasian who was killed inside of a upscale white nightclub in the heart of downtown Minneapolis. This man, by the way, was a brilliant scientist that worked for the organization or the corporation known as Medtronic. In fact, I think it posted something like 18 or 19 patents in his lifetime, 42, 43 years old. So we have a hard time now keeping up with the homicide.
Well, I tell you, I've got one last question. Is the NAACP or the Urban League, are they, what's been their response? Are they taking the leadership in trying to solve the violence problem now at all? I mean, they're out. They must be out front in all of this, right? Is that correct?
My colleague, Mr. Allen, will certainly speak for itself. I'm aware of both organizations. I was a former member of both organizations for many, many, many years. To your question, no, they're not doing anything.
Okay.
In fact, they haven't spoke out. I don't know that the NAACP of St. Paul spoke out on the assassination or murder of a young African-American as he left church with his 9-year-old daughter. And we've heard nothing from the Minneapolis NAACP on this, the whole stuff of homicides. In fact, what we've gotten into is a tragic pattern where we just alternate between both cities. Okay? Kill one, Minneapolis kill another one the next day in St. Paul, vice versa. I mean, that's how tragic it is. Mr. Allen and I were saying in the production meeting, we were really shocked. And Mr. Allen has very, very strong ecumenical ties. He has members of his family who are well-respected, some deceased now, if you will, but well-respected in the ecumenical community. We were just talking in terms of the silence that came out of St. Paul after the young African-American was gunned down as he left the church. In fact, as he fell to the ground, there were photographs taken of his Bible that he had with him and laying in a pool of blood, if you will. Luckily, the pedestrians or others grabbed the child and rushed her to safety as gunfire was exchanged between the deceased and his father. And let us point out that he has a permit to carry and the gunman, if you will. And we would think that something like that would catch the kind of national attention that happened a couple of days later, when CBS and others showed these pictures of at least 25 to 30. And like I said, right now we have one of the largest incarcerations in the history of this city. We had 19 young Negroes, African-Americans, rounded up and have been thrown in jail.
Oh, wow.
As we speak.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, that was. I'll listen to the rest of your show off the air. So, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, sir. Take care.
Bye bye.
Mr. Allen, any other call? Thank you, sir. Any other calls?
Yes, we do.
We want folks to come through. Go ahead.
I'm queuing that caller up. Caller 7172. You're live on the Ron and Don Show. What's your name and your questions? Go ahead.
Yeah, my name's Richard out of St. Paul, and definitely appreciate you guys having the show. I guess it's something, you know, I would tussle with just being kind of younger, growing up in Twin Cities, and seeing the different choices that my peers have made, some being involved in violent activity. And the big thing is traveling in these circles and organizations that, you know, purport to help, and hearing the calls in the community for you know, the city to do more about this violence and things along that line. The battle that I've had with the situation for many years has been how one is convinced that it is not majorly an internal Black culture issue, which, you know, people always say, okay, well, that's speaking, you know, like, you know, somebody who's, you know, white or something along that line. But when growing up, and I constantly see you know, the choices that my peers have made in music and promiscuity and, you know, dashing, you know, the level of school and, you know, also having the challenges of single mother and poverty and things like that. And really the difference and the compare and contrast, how does one get convinced that, yes, you know, City of St. Paul or City of Minneapolis needs to step up and do more, and really what that more is that they should be doing.
Let me do this,
that's
sir.
Really...
I'd like to hand this off to my colleague, Mr. Allen, who is a professional educator. He teaches in the St. Paul Public Schools. He has spoken oftentimes on this. He has raised the same kind of concerns, sir, that you are raising. It's Richard, right? And
that's correct.
Yes, and so if I could get my colleague, Mr. Allen, to get his observation on your, I thought, very compelling question. Don, you wanna, you know, take
sure,
over?
Sure. Thanks for calling, Richard. It's it's very interesting that you have that observation and that question within that observation, because from a 15 to 19-year-old demographic of young black males and deciding they want to do what they want to do, there has been systems in place that have been put in place that have not been put in place by us that should guide them, that are supposed to guide them, reach out to them, and assist them. But these systems, and there's many of them, we need a two-hour show to detail each one of them, the systems that are meant to assist black youth, including our culture, are denied resources or don't have the resources, but have created on one side for non-black folks within the systems an economic base to be financially secure, have a career, et cetera, live the dream, quote unquote. And the other system that is neglected and not even adhered to affect any change, meaning that there's a petri dish of disparities that must be maintained to finance lifestyles and comfortability for less than to ignore the lower one third of the community. So the black culture does have a responsibility. I agree with that statement. But if the black culture cannot interact and be at the same tables, quick example, the Minnesota Department of Health, I sat in a meeting with, I think it was 8 people, a few white women, a couple of white guys, and they were trying to do outreach for the Native American and black community for type 2 diabetes. And I heard them talking. I kept my mouth shut. I looked around, and I was there as a vendor, just me in the room with them. And I looked around, and you know, I said, hey, why don't you have some people in this room that look like the people you're trying to change their lives or get the information to? And they all looked very puzzled. So that's just an example of the kind of things that have generationally been happening here in the Twin Cities, and I don't know how you tie the two together. And I hope that answered your question, you know, the short version.
Well, I guess, you know, and honestly, I guess if we can answer the question, we might have some profound solutions in the Twin Cities. However, really what is eating away at me more is anecdotally, my personal experience with, you know, growing up rather poor and then also watching people who are poorer than me not make the choice to really, and I keep going back to the choice to be involved in such horrendous situations as, you know, literally robbing and beating people severely around the Twin Cities. And it's not, I could actually sympathize to a certain extent if you are doing this for your strict survival. You are, it's that poor person who robs the apple cart to feed his family, or, you know, something along that line. But this is, there was a comparison to the Depression, I believe, earlier in the conversation. And I'm only in my 30s, but from what I see and what I read about the Depression, a lot of the crime was really strictly to put food on the table. These people that I know who are involved even in some of this stuff, it's just because they want that latest and greatest pair of shoes. It's more gluttony versus, you know, hey, I'm trying to feed myself.
Mr. Allen, go right ahead. As an educator, educator, what you see in the classroom every day.
Yeah, I have to agree with you 100%, because there is a it's not even an assumption. It's just, you know, it's more important to have a new pair of leather Jordans than to get an education in some cases. And to get those, you know, comes by any means necessary. And I've seen some really terrible things.
I was just going to say, you know, really, I don't want to take too much time, but the only other thing I keep battling with is I have very little time and resources just because trying to take care of my own family. However, I'm very willing to step up and try and help somebody who reaches out and says, hey, I need help, direction, or guidance. Now, when it comes to kind of the homeless conversation as well and the vagrants, I've seen the cities do a lot, and I've seen them do not enough. And my example is, you know, last year with the homeless encampment on Hiawatha, and, you know, spending lots of money and shifting them to a new place, and now they've congregated and started doing it in another place on Lake and Hiawatha, as you said, or as another gentleman said earlier. Same thing has happened in St. Paul, where the vagrants, if you go into Hamlin and University area, they have it has gotten outrageous. You know, I do not want any of my family members up there, because at the end of the day, it is the worst. And growing up in St. Paul, it's the worst I have ever seen. And I'm, you know, only been around in 30-something years. And I grew up in Frogtown through the 90s, where prostitution and drug dealing and crime was right outside my corner. The thing that I think the cities really need to do more of is actually be more heavy-handed. When I grew up in the 90s, people standing on corners holding signs right off the highway, within a short period of time, somebody, state patrol, city cops, were telling them to move on. It just was not accepted. At the point you start accepting bad behavior, you're going to get more bad behavior. And I don't know, you know, it's definitely not a popular opinion. However, I just consistently see the bad behavior moving and growing. And really what it does is it pushes out those people who are willing to stay and fight out to go somewhere else where they don't have to deal with it. And it leaves only the bad around.
Yeah, well, again, my colleague, Ms. Fallon, who sits with educators and great minds, and it's interesting to see if they are of the same opinion that you have just advanced with regards to, you know, good basic, you know, good versus bad. But your take again, Ms. Fallon, because educators are talking about this all the time, the learning process.
Yeah, it's just in the 4 minutes we have, or actually in the 2 minutes and 50 seconds we have left, I'll just say that this is an issue that needs to be looked at from a secondary point of view, and also reach out to those parents that are not connecting. I'm not blaming on the parents at all. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying that parents need to be at the table as much as their children. Secondary system.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have to figure out a way collectively, yeah, to solve this, because it's getting out of hand. When I have a guy at a school I'm teaching one summer, and the next summer he's shot in the head at the BP station on University in Hamlin, that affects everything that I do, educator. But it's not about me, but it affects that boy sitting in the classroom that looks at you and says, F you, Mr. Allen, I'm not doing this. How do I reach that boy, that black boy? It's all hands on deck for not just me, the other teachers in the classroom and his other teachers. Once we can get to that problem and fix that, and it's going to take parents and the community and the state, the city, et cetera, all this stuff would die down pretty quickly, and also giving them a job. And that's what I'll say on that.
Thank God for that one, Ms. Allen. Yeah, give them a job, but continue to educate them. Richard, want to thank you for taking the time to call in. Feel free to call in at any time. You made some interesting.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for having the show.
All right. Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen, we're down about the last minute and 20 seconds or something like that. And hopefully we've gotten but it's a lot in. We will certainly, I think, we will come back to this issue next Saturday's program. There's just some terrifying things that are happening. And I just cannot overemphasize, Mr. Allen, in closing from my end of the studio, is the death of a young man who went to church on Wednesday to pray and to ask for safety and et cetera for he and his family, who was gunned down outside of a church in the middle of the black community. And we're really kind of silent. All right. Thanks, Don. We'll talk later.
Thank you. Great. This is Ron Adonso. We'll be back next Saturday at 9:30 a.m. Thank you.
Play it loud.